Hello, this is Bill Harris, and I want to welcome you to the Masters of the Secret series. Tonight's guest is my good friend, Dr. Joe Vitale. In addition to being one of the stars of the hit DVD movie, The Secret, Joe is an author, marketer, seminar leader, and overall renaissance man. Dr. Vitale, Joe, is the author of far too many books to mention here. Here are just a few of them. He wrote the recent number one bestseller, The Attractor Factor, Five Easy Steps for Creating Wealth or Anything Else from the Inside Out. This became a number one bestseller twice and even beat the latest Harry Potter book. His latest book, which came out this week, is The E-Code, 33 Internet Superstars Reveal 43 Ways to Make Money Online Almost Instantly with Email Only, or with Only Email. And it, too, is a bestseller. Joe also wrote a fantastic book, the only book on P.T. Barnum's business secrets called There's a Customer Born Every Minute. Besides all of his books, Joe also recorded the number one best-selling Nightingale Conant audio program, The Power of Outrageous Marketing. Joe is also considered to be an internet pioneer. His marketing methods have made people millionaires. He's been involved with every aspect of marketing, from traditional direct mail to publicity to infomercials. He's the president of Hypnotic Marketing, Inc., and the world's first hypnotic writer. He recently created a home study course called Hypnotic Selling Secrets and made $450,000 in 3 days selling it online. Joe knows how to use words. He can say three words to you and get you to give him all your money. I hope he won't do that, because some of you might want to keep your money. He says he can say eight words and get you to never have money worries again, and he said them to me, and I've never had any money worries since. And I don't know about you, but I'm ready to hear this guy. So please welcome Joe, Mr. Fire Vitale. Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. We've got a rainy day in Texas here, and actually it's good because we've been through a drought. So I'm doing fine. I'm looking out the window. I'm safe. I'm sound. I'm dry. And I'm watching the ground get wet. So all is well in the world.
Well, that's good. Well, a lot of people know you because you really are a master marketer. And we can maybe touch on some of that. But what I really wanted to talk to you about today was more, I guess, the spiritual side of things, the meaning of life, your take on life and success. I think a lot. If I was to make a general statement about the people listening to this, I would say that, in fact, you could say this, I suppose, about any people, but that people want to be happy, they want to be peaceful inside, and they want to be successful in the world in some way. Mm. And knowing you as I do, I know that you have some thoughts about this, and I know that like me, you have been searching in your own life for how to create these things, and as I happen to know that you've done a very good job of doing this. You know, the $450,000 in 3 days and those kinds of things are all great, but if you're not happy and peaceful and fulfilled in what you're doing, you know, what does it mean? So can you start off and just sort of talk to me a little bit about your philosophy of life and anything that comes to mind about those three things that I mentioned?
Wow, I didn't know that we would go right into the deep end here and go with these giant philosophical, life-changing, life quest type questions.
Well, we can be practical too.
I'll tell you, I love what you've just painted here about everybody wants to be happy and we want to be successful and we want to be at peace. I think that's ultimately what we're all after, whatever it is we say we want, whether it's the new house, the new car, better health, more wealth, I mean, another a relationship, whatever it happens to be, we want it because we believe it will help us to be at peace. It will help us to be happy or happier. And one I have discovered for myself, and you know, a lot of other people have discovered it, but discovering it for yourself is always the life-turning event. What I learned for myself is that you don't need any of it to be happy right now. And that is probably the million-dollar insight of the day, if not of a lifetime. To realize that right now, in this very moment, as we live and breathe, as this conversation is taking place, as you're sitting up in Oregon, I believe, and I'm here in Texas, we are totally fine. We don't need anything else to take place for us to be happy. Happiness, at peace, and so forth is fundamentally a choice.
Well, I totally agree with you, and this is exactly what I have been teaching for years, that, you know, people whose happiness and inner peace are dependent on what goes on around them have to wait for perfect circumstances in order to feel good. And good grief, how often does that happen? So, you know, not very darned often. And so I agree with you. It comes from inside. And so the question people often have is, well, so how do I do that then?
Well, you brought up a couple things here. First of all, I want to agree that most of us, myself included, I don't want to act like I'm enlightened or anything here. I have my moments where I recognize that all is well, but I often lose it because I'll start looking to outside reality, and I'll want to change things on the outside so I feel better on the inside. And I have to continuously remind myself that, no, this is the moment. It is this moment. The point of power is right now. That doesn't mean I'm not going to go for things on the outside. It doesn't mean I'm not going to write another book or do another promotion or try to make a book a bestseller or try to lose more weight or try to do this or try to do that. I will do all of that, but I will do it from a place of peace and safety and security. And I think this is the real lesson when you asked how do we go about this. It's a matter of realizing you're totally fine right now where you're at. In fact, you're probably living like a king or a queen compared to people in third world countries or people in our past history. You are probably living this lifestyle that other people, if they saw it, would be totally envious of. And we don't pause and appreciate it because we want more, 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 and more. So I think the first step is to realize you're totally fine where you're at. If peace is there, available to you, happiness is in this moment, you can choose to see it, choose to accept it. And then the second step is to choose what you would like to have to experience next. And this sounds like I'm making it a kindergarten level type of process, and in many ways it is. Be happy now, choose what you like to experience next, start working towards it. There you go, three steps, we're done.
Now, just to play devil's advocate, what do you say to someone who says, well, that sounds great in theory, but I just had to declare bankruptcy, and my spouse left me, and my dog was killed, and everything isn't all right. It doesn't seem that everything's all right for me now.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up, Bill. I mean, you're really going for the throat here with asking these questions right there. They're the important questions. In my book, the one of the most recent ones, The Attractor Factor, in the back I have this quote that reminds people to put things into perspective. And I'm not going to be able to give you the exact quote, but the idea behind it is whatever's going on right now, if it looks absolutely horrible in your life, 1 year from now, or certainly 5 years from now, or certainly 10 years from now, you will look back at this moment in time and you will find a good way of looking at it. You will often say, there's so many cancer victims, for example, who will say, cancer was the best thing that ever happened to me. But when they were diagnosed with it, that was a very bad day. A very bad day. But a year later, 5 years later, whatever it happened to be, they will look back and say, it was the most beautiful thing that ever happened. And for a variety of reasons. It may have helped them build strength. It may have helped them learn discipline. It may have helped them believe in magic and miracles. It may have helped them believe in realizing the beauty of each moment. I don't know what that is. But what I'm suggesting here is that this moment, if the wife did leave or the husband and the dog died and whatever else happens to have been there, 5 years perspective will give you a different view of this moment in reality. So if that 5 years perspective is available to you 5 years from now, it's available to you right now.
Well, you know, one of the things that I teach is that the entire key to life is what you focus on.
Yes, yes.
And so if something that you would prefer not to happen happens, and good Lord, that happens to everyone. If you go a week where something happened, or even a whole day where something that you didn't want to happen to you happens, then I think that would be pretty extraordinary. You know, Napoleon Hill always said, every adversity carries with it the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit.
Yes, absolutely.
And that you have to look for that benefit. So when something happens, if you focus on what could the potential benefits of this be, it takes your mind in a whole new direction that creates a completely different reality for you than if you then start instead focusing on what you don't like about what has happened.
Absolutely. It's a fundamental law in psychology that you get more of whatever you focus on. And again, in the attractor factor, I say that's what you end up attracting into your life. So if you end up focusing on whatever it is that you're perceiving to be bad, then you will get more of those kind of feelings because you are in that energy place that you're acting like a magnet for it. You're going to pull more of that to you. You're going to see it because you have these eyes of misery, and you will look for more misery. However, if you look at this moment and say, well, that's unfortunate that took place. I wonder what the good is in it. Or even better, I wonder how I can turn it into something good. From a marketing standpoint, I'm always telling people I see opportunities everywhere because whenever somebody states a complaint, I hear it as an opportunity. If somebody complains that a product doesn't work or something in their life isn't going the way they want, I'm thinking in the back of my mind, I wonder how I can create a product that will give them what they want. I wonder how I can create an ebook or an audio or some sort of product that will help them achieve what they want. I hear the complaints as opportunities. That causes my perception to be completely different. I don't get stuck in the mindset of, I don't want this. I get into the mindset of, how can I turn this into something positive? And, of course, in my case, I want to profit from it while helping others. So it is a whole perceptual thing, and it is in our control. The vast majority of the people out there, not the people listening to this call, because I'm sure they're more elevated in their awareness and their consciousness, but the vast majority of the people out there are stuck on that plane of being a victim. And as they look at themselves in their life as being a victim, they get more of that kind of stuff. They're going to pull in everything that's going to enable them to be a victim. The ironic thing about all of this is that they are creating it. They don't know that they're creating it because they're totally unconscious of the process. I tell people, including myself, when I look in the mirror, that everything that's happening in my life is a creation. And I was the guy creating it.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, this whole series that I'm doing, this World's Greatest Teacher series, came about because of this Oracle database debacle we had that affected tons and tons of people. And I said the very thing we've been talking about. I said, how can I turn this disaster into something positive? And because of that, this series, I know, is going to help a lot of people. And so if this hadn't happened, I probably, you know, I might have got the idea for this series anyway, but it certainly did stimulate me to get this idea. What, you know, a lot of people have already heard the story of when Centerpoint was a year old and we'd had a whopping $12,000 in sales the first year. Mm-hmm. Someone sued me for $1 million, claiming that I had stolen their technology and stolen this and stolen that. And it was a frivolous lawsuit. But I was, you know, I was making $3,000 a month at the time and was pretty green, had no idea how to deal with this. I was waking up in the middle of the night, you know, in a cold sweat because I thought I was going to lose my house and the few things that I did have. And I asked my attorney, how much is this going to cost? And he said, well, it could ultimately cost about $150,000 in legal fees if it goes all the way. You'll find out why they say don't make a federal lawsuit out of it. And so I said to myself, my business partner said, well, Centerpoint isn't worth anywhere near spending that kind of money on defending. So I said to myself, well, what would it look like if it was worth spending $150,000 to defend? And I started mapping out in my head, you know, what it would look like. And today it looks like that.
Oh, fascinating.
And if I had not been sued, which, just like the person being told they have cancer when it happened, it was a huge disaster to me. Mm-hmm. But when I look back on it, it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I would not have Centerpoint. I would not be, a personal growth teacher. I wouldn't be doing all the things I'm doing. I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you.
Amazing.
So, you know, like you say, if you're going to look back on something at some point and think, you know, in a strange sort of way, that was a good thing that that happened, why not start thinking that right immediately and skip all the part where you feel bad?
I'm laughing because it's such a refreshing concept. I'm sure for a lot of people it's a head-blowing concept. You know, we've never considered it before. But this is available to all of us, to you, to me, to everybody listening. And I guess I'm going to go ahead and give another example. It was about a year and a half, 2 years ago, when I was on a flight from Denver to Las Vegas, I had an asthma attack, which is not pleasant to have anywhere because you're basically drowning while still in the environment.
I mean, I remember that.
You
remember
can't get your air. And I was on a plane. You can't ask them to pull over, roll down a window. I mean, there's none of that kind of stuff available. Well, even though that was terrifying And I ended up going to the emergency room, which I had never gone to before. I've always been healthy, always been solid, stable, bullish, you know, never kind of any kind of problems, never been to the hospital. Ended up doing all of that. And all of that looked pretty horrible. In fact, we were going to Vegas for a week-long vacation, and it began with this experience. So that week-long vacation was mostly one of worry and concern and fretting about my future and my health and all of that. Well, at the same time, it was that very event that was the turning point in causing me to look at losing weight and getting fit, ultimately for the first time in my life. I'm now 51 years old. I have lost over 70 pounds. I have been in three fitness contests. I'm in my fourth one right now. I have built my own gym that has more in it than a lot of health clubs here. I've hired a personal trainer. I've gone out and worked out with Frank Zane, Mr. Olympia. He's won it like three times, a famous legend in the bodybuilding business. And 2 years before all of this, if you had said, you're going to build your own gym, you're going to become a bodybuilder, you're going to lose some weight, you're going to go work out with Frank Zane, I would have said, what? What planet are you from? That's not Joe Vitale. He doesn't do stuff like that. Well, it's Joe Vitale now, and Joe does do stuff like that, and it all was triggered by something that stops other people. It was triggered by something that in the moment looked like a horrifying, hellish experience. And on some ways, it was. But I was able to turn it into something good. And I can, of course, look back on it and say, yeah, I see how that was useful. So what I'm saying, and you're reiterating here, is that we can look at these possibly negative momentary experiences and say, okay, we don't like this experience. How can it be turned into something good? What's the lesson in it? What can evolve from it? All of it is useful.
Well, it's, you know, we've never talked about this before, and it's interesting that you're reiterating pretty much exactly what I have found to be true about this. And now that I think about it, when I think of other very successful people I know, like Jack Canfield, for instance, everyone I know that is successful in the way that you are and that I am and Jack is, thinks this way. And that should be a big clue to people who are struggling. You know, in fact, one of the things that I often say is, for any outcome you want, there is a certain way of thinking and acting that will get it for you. Mm-hmm. Your job is to find out what it is, and we're telling what it is right now, so that part is handled, and then be flexible enough to adopt it. And I find that the flexibility part is where most people have trouble. Most all of the quote-unquote secrets of life are not secrets anymore. There's very little that is esoteric anymore in this age. But where people get in trouble is that they are not flexible enough to change the way they think and act in order to align it with what really works.
Yeah.
Another thing that you mentioned in passing, I just want to reiterate and maybe get your thoughts on, is this idea that I'm going to put it kind of in my own words. People think that they're not good at manifesting things. Mm-hmm. I hear this all the time from the students that I have. Well, I'm just no good at manifesting things. And I tell them, you're actually an expert at manifesting things. You're magically good at manifesting things. Because whatever you focus on manifests. Your problem isn't that you can't manifest things. It's that you aren't conscious about what you focus on. Your focuser is running on autopilot. And it's focusing on a lot of things that you don't want without you intending that necessarily. And because of that, it's creating a lot that you don't want in your life. So if you want something in life, you've got to consciously and intentionally get control of your focusing and focus on it.
Absolutely. And well said. In fact, that's what's been the turning point for me to lose weight is I could unconsciously go through life and put on weight and look out into the world and say that it's because of my genes, it's because of how I was brought up, it's because of DNA, habits, psychological upbringing. I kept pointing the finger elsewhere. It wasn't until I really took control of the unconscious process that was going on, made it conscious, and then took new steps to make a new habit out of this and to take on the mindset, if you will, or the beliefs or the programming of somebody who is fit and trim and slim, that I began to make those changes. And I want people to realize that, you know, when they listen to somebody like you or they listen to somebody like me, they might say to themselves, yeah, it's working for you guys. You guys have mastered the process. first thing I want to say is I have not mastered the process. I feel like I've woken up in first grade and I'm just learning how to use this process. And the second thing I want to say is I was homeless at one point, 30-some years ago in Dallas. I slept on the steps of the post office waiting for checks that I hoped would arrive so I can eat. And when I moved to migrated to Houston, when that was a boom town back in the late 70s, I took all kind of jobs and lived in poverty. I was a reporter, a truck driver, a taxi cab driver, a laborer. I was in this poverty mindset, this low self-esteem. I was really, in my opinion, working at making a difference in my life. I did want to be an author. I did want to pursue writing. I did have that as a calling that was coming from my heart. But I was bouncing against this unconscious belief system that was not allowing me to get the results I wanted. So I had to get into reading all of the books, you know, the Think and Grow Rich and The Magic of Believing by Claude Bristol, and doing a lot of seminars and working with a coach and slowly making all of that was unconscious conscious. So I can make new decisions. I had to let go of all the programming. And I'm trying to say this in a way so that people who are listening who may be struggling, not that anybody may be homeless, though somebody listening might be, and I want them to realize that, wow, Joe came from there. Joe came from the streets. And now I live a luxurious lifestyle. I mean, I just sold my second house. I have a country estate out here, which you've flown down to and stayed at. I just bought another car, which was a luxury item. I just bought a luxury sports car, a BMW 645 CI, that was made for me in Germany. And when I stop and realize, Joe, you were the guy who was sleeping on the steps in Dallas, starving, hoping to get some work, hoping to get some money, hoping to make a difference, and now today, 30-some years later, BMW, one of the finest car artists in the world, just made a car for you in Germany that was shipped to you, it fries my brain because I am so different. How did I become different? It's changing from the inside out. It's all the stuff you've been talking about.
Well, and I think you're making the same point that I often make, which is that literally anyone can do this.
Yes, this
is not, you know, very often I know people look at me and they think, well, yeah, it's okay for you, Bill. I mean, you've got a lot of money and you've got a big company and so on and so forth. I mean, I could tell I've never been homeless, but I could tell a pretty grim story of, you know, being in my early 30s, my wife left me. She took my last $3,000 when she left. I had no job, no job prospects. You know, I was the golden boy when I was in high school. Everybody thought I was going to grow up and be a heart surgeon or something like that, or a big lawyer or whatever. And I got into drugs when I was in my 20s and just sort of had this tailspin. And I was approaching 40 and I had no money, no career, no relationships, was depressed, was angry, and all of that, and it was really finding this same idea of focusing your mind on what you want, taking action, looking at other people who were creating whatever it was I wanted to create, and modeling what they were doing, modeling their way of thinking and acting. And boy, I stumbled many times where I, you know, made a little progress, and then I stumbled and then thought, oh, this is a pipe dream, I can't do this, but I guess I was just at the point where I thought, well, there's nothing else to do but keep going. I don't know, you know, it was either keep going or kill myself, and I really didn't feel like killing myself, so I kept going, and eventually, through a lot of wrong turns and stumbles, I figured out how to do this, and like you, I don't feel like I've mastered this completely. I don't feel like in every moment I'm totally in control of my mind, but I certainly notice the times when I'm not in control of it, and sometimes I sit there and wallow in feeling lousy for a little while before I say, okay, enough of this. But as soon as I decide that I'm going to change it, I know how to change it, and I do change it, and when I change it, it works. So
beautiful, beautiful. Well, I didn't even know all about your background there, so thanks for sharing that personal story. And I'm glad you did, because it's, again, a reminder that all of this is available to everybody. We're not born knowing all of this material. We learn it. And for the first part of our life, for the vast majority of people, they go through their entire lives totally unconscious. Totally unconscious. Live to the age of 90 and die totally unconscious, just living out whatever their programming was in the beginning. And those of us who are on the call, listening to this right now, my best bet is that they're far more alert and far more conscious, and we're just kind of raising the bar here. And as I listen to you, Bill, you are raising it even for me and helping me realize, yes, I want to be more aware in each moment. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm going in that direction, and I feel good about that kind of process.
You know, thinking about the people that have trouble adopting this, there's a question I've thought about a lot over the years because I deal with so many people, and some of them just take this information and just run with it, and within a very short time their life really is substantially different. And then there are other people that just have the hardest time, and I kept thinking, what is it about these people that have such a hard time, and how can I help them? And finally what I concluded was that the people that have a really hard time with this are unwilling to adopt one particular principle that I think is probably the core principle behind all this stuff, and we've sort of touched on it already, and that is the idea that no matter how it looks, in some way or other, you're creating how you feel in every moment, and you're creating all the situations and people that you attract or are attracted to. And because a lot of people cannot see how they're doing that, because that process to them so far is unconscious, out of their awareness, they conclude that the triggers outside of them, the stuff they're taking in through their senses, is the cause of how they feel, whereas it's really what they're doing with it. So anyway, I've just found that the people that just will not buy into this idea that somehow, even if they can't figure it out, they're creating all this stuff, those people really stay stuck. Once somebody adopts that point of view, then they can start figuring out, you know, how the how-to part of it.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I think what you're saying is a statement that I make in The Attractor Factor, where I say that you have to take 100% responsibility for everything that occurs in your life in order for you to change these things. And that is the hardest thing for everybody to accept. And I have to admit to myself, too. I'll give you a story that I've never told anybody. It just happened within the past few weeks. Of course, my ex-wife, who I was married to for 20-some years, best friend and everything, died last year. And it was a major event for me. This was my best friend, and we were married for 20-some years. And even though when we were separated, we were still best friends. We still stayed in contact and, you know, every day talked or emailed or saw each other. And she died last October. So I would put her house on the market to sell, and it took forever to sell. And I was wondering, why isn't this selling? What is going on? Of course, I never looked within myself. I always looked at the outside circumstances, and I would find people to validate. Oh, the market's a little bit tough right now. They're building new homes in the area, so the older homes don't sell as well. All of that kind of stuff was there. When I finally found a buyer, it took forever for this house to close. Partly because the original owner of the house, this is fairly complicated, but when I first bought the house, it was owner finance. The original owner of the house did not want to sign any papers to release the house, even though he was going to get paid off if he signed. And I would look at that and go, now why is he being a stubborn, you know what? Why is he being this guy? Always, again, looking outside. And I had to stop and ask myself, Joe, you're the guy who says everything in your life is being attracted to you because of you. You have to take 100% responsibility for everything that's happening. Instead of looking out there and blaming the previous owner, blaming the realtor, blaming the economy, blaming the housing market, look at yourself, take responsibility, and say, okay, why don't you want to sell the house? I pause, look within myself, and it's like, this is the last concrete reminder of my wife. And I didn't want to let it go. When I finally came to grips with that and said, okay, I'm never going to forget her, you know, that's still going to be in my heart, it's going to be okay, I was able to sell the house 24 hours later.
Wow. That's a great story.
But taking responsibility even for myself, and I'm the guy standing up there as this, you know, I don't know, an evangelist for the whole idea of the Attractor Factor and taking responsibility for your life and creating your own reality. And I'm admitting that it is incredibly difficult for us to take 100% responsibility for our lives because it is so incredibly easy to point outside and say, no, it's the president's fault, it's the economy's fault, it's the terrorist's fault, it's my spouse's fault, it's my dog's fault, it's, you know, whoever's fault. That's easy to do, and that's not reality. That's the illusion.
Right, exactly. That's it's what you do with all of that stuff inside that really makes the difference. Well, I noticed when you were telling that story, at a certain point in there, you asked yourself a question.
Yes.
And I sort of generalized this question that you asked and call it the magic question. And it starts with, how can I? And you started to add, and I don't remember exactly what you said, but something about how can I figure out how, you know, why this house, why I'm not able to sell this house or something. And when you said that, it just reminded me of the fact that a lot of people get stumped when they're trying to do this. Even, you know, they're trying to figure out, how did I create this mess? And they don't start asking themselves those kinds of questions. And because people don't realize that when you ask yourself those kinds of questions, whether it's, how can I figure this out, or how can I, you know, make 20 sales before next Friday, or how can I write a book, or how can I, whatever it is, when you ask yourself those questions and really get curious about the answers, I mean, really ask them. This is not just like parroting the words. It's really thinking, okay, how can I do this? There's a way to do this. I haven't figured it out yet. How can I do this? When you ask that, it does something inside your head that generates all kinds of ideas coming from inside of you. It may be attracting things psychically to you, for all I know. It certainly causes you to notice things that you overhear, or you walk through a bookstore and a book jumps off the shelf into your hands, or, you know, something. So I know that you think this way, too. So give me your views on this whole idea.
I'm glad you brought that up, because this is another fundamentally, well, it's a phenomenal technique. And it's the idea that your brain can be directed, and you can direct it by the questions you ask. Now, most people ask these negative questions that send them down the sewer.
Right. What's wrong with me?
You know, the favorite... The favorite question of the mind is something like, what if? What if things go bad? What if I can't pay my bills? What if I don't lose weight? What if I have a health problem? What if she leaves me? You know, they ask the negative question. But and that causes your brain to go, and the brain's neutral. The brain's just got to go after the solution that you gave the question there for. So if you ask something that's negatively leading, it's just going to go and obey you. So if you say, what if I don't get better by next week, or what if I don't raise the money by Friday, your brain's going to say, okay, let's come up with all the ways that you can't raise it by Friday.
Right. And my favorite is the question, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
If you ask yourself what's wrong with me, your brain will always come up with a list of plausible things that are wrong with you, even if objectively there isn't anything wrong with you.
Exactly. Well, the beauty of this is that you can take control of your brain and ask different questions. So they can be the questions like, what are some ways to raise the money by Friday to pay the bills that I need to pay? And it could be even a better constructed question, you know, what is an easy, effortless, and healthful way to lose the unnecessary pounds I'm carrying by August 22nd? I mean, you can ask these well-constructed questions that will cause your brain just to be an obedient researcher. It'll go within you, first of all, looking for any answers, but then it also kind of alerts your mental radar so that when you are browsing online, or you're getting some snail mail, or as you pointed out, you're walking through the bookstore, suddenly these thousands of books are blurred, but one book seems to almost leap off the page or off the shelf. And that's the book that's geared towards the answer to the question that you had given to your brain. So I treat the brain like this, I don't know, like a missile operating pad, and you tell it what you're looking for in terms of an answer, and it will go and find it. So you want to be more positively directed than negatively directed. To give the example that you gave earlier, rather than asking what's wrong with me, what's right with me? List all my positive qualities and let it go to work for you there. It will just as beautifully come up with answers for that question as it will for the other question.
Sure, and another kind of pair of polar opposites of questions is, why can't I, and then you fill in the blank, as opposed to, how can I? And
I love that.
And my whole life changed when I stopped saying, why can't I, whatever it was, and started saying, how can I? And at first, when I started using questions in this way, sometimes some questions, it would be a month or so of me asking it before the answer would appear. But as you get better at this and have more practice, I find that most of the time the answer comes to me within a second or two.
Wow.
Occasionally that's not the case, but almost always it comes to me within a second or two. And I, you know, you're saying wow, but I'll bet that you do the same thing.
Well, I'm reflecting on my wow there, and I am impressed that it comes within a second or two, but I also think it depends on the question and what you're looking for. And then as I reflect on it fairly quickly here, spontaneously, yes, the answers do tend to come very quickly. Whether they come in a second or two would depend on the subject and what I'm trying to get an answer to. But I have found, well, let me give you an example. When I went through that whole asthma event and, you know, came back to Texas and went through this whole semi-depressed period for a week or so, thinking, okay, I got to do something about my health, but what? And then, of course, the emergency room bill arrives, which buckles my knees, and I'm thinking, okay, I don't want any more of this. But the question becomes, how can I quickly, easily, safely lose weight, achieve my ideal body, do it as quickly and as safely as possible in a way that's going to be permanent? And I don't know if that's the exact question I asked, but you get the idea that I was asking a positively directed question. That very week, and it might have been the next day, certainly within 3 days, I got an email from a company I had never heard of before. It was the Mental Toughness Institute for Weight Control. And it comes in, and I'm going, what in the world is this? And, you know, it's one of those things where you feel in your gut that this is your answer. It's one of those things where you put out the question, here comes the answer, and it's resonating, so you know that unless you deny this consciously and just dismiss it, you know it's the right thing. I explored it, and I said, you know, this is coming at the right time. I'm the right guy. I had asked the question. This looks like the answer. I signed up, and I swear to God, Bill, that was a transformative experience. I still love those people. I'm still in contact with them, and that was the awakening process for me, and their whole system is all about what we've been talking about here, making what's previously been unconscious, all the creation that's going on in your life that's been unconscious previously. In my case, it was unconscious to make me overweight. It was very easy to do it because I was just operating unconsciously. Had to take all of that, make that process conscious, and then go with a new direction, which has made a whole new me. There's how this works right there.
In a way, this is why Holosync works, because I mean, I can describe the benefits of it in a million ways, but really what it does is it makes you more aware. And aware, as Ken Wilber says, awareness in and of itself is transformative. It's really the key to all the rest of the stuff. You know, you've mentioned the attractor factor, one of your books, a number of times, and I read that book. You was named, was that the spiritual marketing book before?
The really slender version of it was called Spiritual Marketing.
Yeah, and I read that. I believe I've read every one of your books, unless you haven't sent them to me, because you sent me a big box of them at one point.
That's right.
And I don't know if you're in this situation, but I have people sending me books and other things.
Oh, yeah.
Every day, yeah. I get stuff from people, and I just, you know, I wouldn't have any time to do anything else if I didn't read them.
Mm-hmm.
And very often, notable people send me books too, and often I don't have time to read them. But I picked up, I think that was the one I picked up really first, was The Attractor Factor, mm-hmm. and I read a page and a half, and I could not put it down.
Wow.
And once I'd read that book, I read every other book you'd sent me, and everyone was delightful, and everyone was a little different, you know, a different perspective on things. I mean, you're a very multifaceted Renaissance kind of guy, is the kind of the way I see you.
Oh, thank
and
you.
Anyway, I just give people a little more information about that particular book, because I think
okay.
that's an important book, and I think it would really resonate with a lot of people who are listening.
Well, there's a couple of things that I want people listening to understand about this book, because this is a teaching tale here. I did not want to release the book that was originally called Spiritual Marketing, and then when it was revised and published by a major publisher, it's now called The Attractor Factor. I never wanted to originally release it because it was a personal book. It had a lot of my personal struggle stories in it, from homeless to, you know, whatever I am today. And I only wrote it as a little booklet for my sister, because she was struggling. She had been on welfare. She had been in poverty. She was trying to raise 3 kids. And by then, I knew these secrets to prosperity. I knew these secrets to creating your own reality. The Art of Manifestation, if you will, and I wrote the little booklet for her. But I didn't want to release it to the world because I thought, I've been published by the American Marketing Association, the American Management Association. I've got an audio series with Nightingale Conant. These are all very conservative, large companies. What will they think of me? What will the world think of me if I stand up and say, folks, one of the things I do in my life to achieve these results is I work from the inside out. And I thought, oh, they're going to think I'm flaky. So I didn't release the book for the longest time, and then as I slowly did, and I would give it to my sister, I'd give it to a few friends, and I'd see them get these results. My sister got off welfare, she got a job, she bought a car. She still struggles some with money, but she's not fully practicing the processes either. So anyway, long story short, I found that very often the gold in a person's life is in that area where they're afraid. I was afraid to release the attractor factor because of I thought, what will people think of me? Yet when I did release it, it has become a bestseller 3 times. It has gone through 4 printings. Even Spiritual Marketing has been a bestseller and gone through several printings. It's published by a major publisher who has now signed, I think, 3 other book deals with me because they're so delighted with the success of the attractor factor. The attractor factor is my most beloved book. I have, 30-some books between e-books and published books, and I've been published in any way, shape, or form you can think of, from self-published, print-on-demand, traditional publishing, the whole route. The attractor factor is still the one that shines the brightest, yet it was the one I was most reluctant to share. So I'm trying to express to people that if you are looking to bring in riches in your life, besides doing all the things we've been talking about on this call, also look in that area of your life where you really have a thrill, you really have a passion, you really have a love, but you've not shared it with the rest of the world, not in a public way. It could be a sign of the gold that's waiting for you. And then the other part of this is, well, the attractor factor revealed a 5-step formula for creating wealth or anything else from the inside out. And again, it's all about the stuff we've been touching on throughout this call, about taking complete responsibility, about directing our mind to go in the right direction, or directing our brain to bring us the answers we want, about realizing that we're already master creators. We've just been doing it unconsciously, so we're getting things that we consciously say we don't quite prefer, and we want to become aware of that process and take control of it. So I love the attractor factor. I'm very proud of it. In fact, I'll tell listeners that if they want to get a special deal, the deal that was going on when I first promoted the book, where you can get thousands of dollars if you just went, thousands of dollars worth of bonuses, if you just went and bought a copy of the book, is still active at this secret site. It's MrFire.com/factor. www.mrfire.com/factor.
And I'll also say that I love your website. Believe it or not, Joe, on wet afternoons, sometimes I go to your site just to poke around and look at all the cool stuff you have there.
Well, that's nice to hear. Thank you.
You're into so many different things that there's just all kinds of different stuff on your site. And so I encourage anyone listening to this to go to MrFire.com, M-R-F-I-R-E.com, and just look around because there's all kinds of other tools and resources and information there that are along the same lines of some of the things we've been talking about. Now, one of the things we haven't talked about is marketing. And I bring this up actually because a lot of the people that are CenterPoint participants, I know, have a problem with marketing. They often think that marketing is manipulative, or that it, you know, somebody's trying to get somebody to do something they don't want to do, or buy something they don't want to buy, and so on. And you know, you bill yourself as a hypnotic marketer, and that sounds like, well, you're going to hypnotize me and take my money and yeah, all of this. So I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about this, because I know your philosophy about this is similar to mine, which is that I think marketing is explaining to people certain benefits that they can get if they are willing to trade their money or whatever other payment it might be for whatever the item is. And the whole idea is that at the end of the transaction, they have something they wanted more than the money, and you have the money, since that's what you wanted, because that's you're in business, you know, in order to to sell products, and everybody ends up happier. And this the hypnosis, if you want to use that word, isn't to try to get anybody to do something they don't want to do. It's really to help people overcome their own ways of sabotaging themselves from going ahead and getting what they want.
I'm glad you asked the question, because this is not about manipulation or persuasion or browbeating people or the old used car salesman mentality or way of being. This is all about, in the short form, this is all about finding the target audience who most wants your product or service. That's really what marketing is. It's finding that target audience that's already got a mindset looking for your product or service. It's just that match is where the sale takes place, and marketing is just telling them both about it. But I want to go ahead and say something that I found explains marketing in a way that seems to make a lot of sense to people that have been listening to me talk before, because I've heard these objections before. And I say, you know, I don't really care for marketing myself. And I don't look at what I do as marketing. I'll give you a quick story here. A year or so ago, I'm laying on the massage table, getting a massage from my massage therapist, and this is one of those unusual times when she would not shut up. She was just talking a mile a minute, and it was all about a movie she had seen the night before. And she saw a movie that I'm sure you're aware of and your listeners should see if they haven't yet, and that's What the Bleep Do We Know. So she had seen What the Bleep Do We Know the night before, and she was just raving about this movie. She would not be quiet. She just went on and on and on. Now, of course, I got interested. I ended up going to see the movie. I, of course, told her later that I saw the movie. And my question that I ask people when I tell the story is, was she doing marketing? Now, everybody says no, but she was. She was marketing that movie. She was not getting paid to do it, but she was certainly marketing that movie. It was a form of marketing. I say that when you look at this real closely, all she was doing was sharing her love to somebody who she felt would be very interested in the product or service she was describing. Well, by God, that's a great definition of marketing. That's kind of an elevated, noble, higher consciousness way of looking at the word marketing. If people look at marketing and think, oh, that's just, you know, it's evil, it's mind manipulation, it's money grubbing. Well, forget marketing altogether then. Just go with sharing. If you have a product or service you believe in, and by God, you should believe in it if you're offering it to the world, otherwise, why are you promoting this product or service? Get out of it and get to something you do believe in. So if you've got a product or service you believe in, you want to share your belief in it with the people that are most likely to want to hear about it. That's marketing. So I've just transformed this whole conversation by saying it's not about the marketing, it's about the sharing. You don't walk around and just share whatever it is, the restaurant you just ate at, with everybody in the world. You share it with the people who are your family, who are your friends, maybe your clients, because you think, you know what, they would be interested in this. That's marketing. Sharing what you love in a passionate, enthusiastic, sincere way with the people who would be most interested in hearing about it.
Well, I just assume that people would want to know about something that I know about that would solve a problem they have,
yes,
or would give them a benefit they want. And in fact, you know, what would they think of me if I knew about something that would solve a problem they have,
and
or give
them, tell.
And I didn't tell them?
Yes.
And then the second part of it is, then I try to make them an offer that they can't refuse, to to quote the Godfather.
Right.
You know, I try to make the description of what I'm telling them about enthusiastic and engaging, so that they stick with it and get to the end where I make them the offer, and then I try to make them the best possible offer that I can, so that they really say, wow, this is really worth it. This is what I want, and it's really worth it. And what I have found is that the people that have trouble with this are almost always, if not always, people who have problems maintaining good boundaries.
Yes.
They, for instance, if I tell someone about something and it costs $249, let's say, and they're having trouble paying their bills and they don't have an extra $249, they get into this state where they really want the benefits I've described, but then they feel all this anxiety about their finances and the fact that they really can't afford it. And instead of saying, and this goes back to something we were talking about earlier, instead of saying, wow, I'm creating this feeling of anxiety in myself because of my finances. Mm-hmm. They blame me for creating that anxiety in them. Or it could be it could be that they really want the benefits, but they don't know me yet, and so they're not sure if they can believe me. And so they feel anxiety about, I want this, but maybe it's some sort of a scam. Mm-hmm. And they feel anxiety, and instead, again, of saying, wow, I am creating anxiety in myself by what I am doing inside, they blame me for creating anxiety in them, and then they write me a three-page letter complaining about the marketing, which I use as a teaching opportunity. I'll usually spend the time to write them a letter back, and I try to explain to them what I think is going on. But
That's beautiful. I'm glad you said that. Well, you know, I put up one of many websites recently. This one is at attractanewcar.com. And www.attractanewcar.com. And I'm saying that for a couple reasons. One is I'm marketing right now because I'm very excited about this, and I think the people listening on this call would want to hear about it. But the second reason here is that there's a case history going on. If you read the sales letter at attractanewcar.com, towards the bottom of it, when I'm starting to get to the kill here, what I mean by that is I'm starting to go for the close that I'm asking you to buy, I also get to the point where I say, I know that you're probably wondering if you should believe me or not. And I list a couple things that are obviously on people's minds, like, is this process really got to work? Can I really attract a new car using Joe's system? And second of all, I say something like, and you're probably wondering if you can trust me or not. So this is where hypnosis comes in, where I'm starting to create rapport by paying attention to where I believe people's mindset is, but I'm also doing this process of highlighting the very beliefs on their brain and then going to the next step to say, look, it's this very quality of doubt that is keeping you from attracting a new car and getting a lot of the results in your life. What I'm saying here, Bill, is I've used the very thing people have ended up writing to you and me with complaints about. I've woven it into the sales letter and said, look, if you're going to let doubt stop you from buying this, you're probably letting doubt stop you from doing the very things you want to achieve in your life. Are you going to stop it, or are you going to go forward? So I'm using it within the sales letter to increase sales.
And I just went to the site, and it's as all of your – I love reading your sales letters anyway, because you're just such a great writer, and I love to steal your ideas, and because you're a great copywriter, and people can see you kissing your lovely wife in front of your custom-made
brand new
car.
Brand-new car, right.
Yes, and what's this other car below it? Batman's golf cart?
Oh, yeah, one of the guys – this is a great story. Pat O'Brien of InstantChange.com is one of my partners on some products. This is the guy who was driving a beat-up pickup truck that had 250,000 miles on it. He was a struggling musician, really wrestling with self-esteem, with poverty, with accepting money into his life. He had to really come to grips with the idea that he could have a new car. Now, for him to allow a new car into his life, he chose a Ski-On, which is what there's a picture of there. And, of course, when he got it, he absolutely loved it, and he called it Batman's golf cart, which is a cute way of describing the darn thing. But you got to realize, for him to allow that car into his life was like, you know, somebody else allowing a jet into their lives, to own a jet, for example. I mean, this was huge. It caused a deep transformation, and he had to change a lot of beliefs to allow it. So that's just one example. Somebody else wanted a sailboat. There was somebody else who wanted $50,000 in cash and got it. And, you know, the list goes on and on. But I'm not trying to sell something. If people go to attract a new car and buy, that's wonderful, of course. I'm trying to use this to illustrate the process of marketing. I love everything that I'm selling on that website. I believe the people that end up going there are a match for it. So, of course, this is my sharing again. I believe they should buy it because it's going to make a difference in their lives. And all the principles in the website and in that course are the very things you and I have been touching on throughout this hour or so conversation.
So attractanewcar.com is really a practical demonstration of how people can direct their mind in a way that attracts whatever they want.
And that's the whole point. Because a lot of people will say, yeah, I'm learning the process of manifestation, or I've done a few books or whatever, but they're still broke. And so I'm saying, okay, let's do this on something really concrete. If you can look in your driveway and see a brand new car there next week or in 30 days, then you can nod and say, yeah, I manifested that. I used attractanewcar.com. And if you can't do it, then you haven't mastered the system. So I'm just using manifesting a new car, attracting a new car, as a personal development exercise. It's not about the car. It's not about the car. It's about you and becoming conscious of your own inner power.
Well, it's interesting that you're doing this, Joe, because the very first thing that I consciously decided to attract was a new car. I was 27 years old. I was selling real estate. I'd been selling real estate for maybe a year, and my real estate broker gave me the book Think and Grow Rich to read. And after I read it, I got very excited about it, because in that book, Napoleon Hill gives a pretty easy to follow step-by-step way of creating whatever you want. And so I went to my real estate broker and said, well, what kind of a goal do you think I should set? And I thought he was going to say, sell X houses in X time or something like that, or a certain amount of money. But he was smarter than I thought he was, because he did the same thing that you're doing, which is very smart. He made it very tangible. He says, why not? Why don't you get a nice car? And at the time, I thought, well, that sounds very materialistic. You know, I mean, it sounds, you know, like, you know, I should also get some two-tone shoes and plaid pants to go with the rest of my real estate salesman outfit or something. I mean, that's the idea. That's what I thought of real estate salesmen at the time, and I suppose there are some that are that way. But at any rate, that was the year, 1977, that the Cadillac Seville first came out, which was a smaller, more compact, sportier Cadillac. And so I decided I would get one of those in 6 months. And then I thought, okay, now what do I do? After I wrote down this goal, because I had no idea how to go about doing it. So the only thing I could think of doing was to go to the dealership and look at them. And I thought, well, what a lame first step. But it was the only thing I could think of. So I went to the dealership, and I started looking at them. And to make a long story short, I had the car not in 6 months, but in 6 days.
Oh, wow.
And I found out when I got there that I could lease the car, and that the payment wasn't very high at all, and that I was making plenty of money already and it caused me to feel so much different about myself at the time that my income really went up quite a lot then after that, and it made it a pittance to afford it. And so then I said, gosh, if this is amazing, this really works. Which is, of course, what you want people to say when they go to attractacar.com and do what you say. So then I set another goal that I would make. I don't even remember what it was. I think it was $7,500 in 30 days, which was a lot of money at the time. This was 1977 when that was probably $20,000 or so in today's money, maybe even a little more. But at any rate, I made exactly $20,000 in exactly the next 30 days to the penny, which of course caused me to say, what's wrong with you? Why did you only say $7,500? You know, you can tell me if this ever happened to you, Joe. At a certain point, this was working so well that I began to think, I don't need to do anything to make this work. It just seemed so effortless that all the stuff was coming to me that I stopped all the stuff I was doing every day of writing down goals, thinking about them, asking myself, how am I going to do this, and so on. And then stuff stopped happening.
Right.
And then I had to say, okay, this really reinforced to me that there was a strong connection between what I was doing inside my head and what was happening. And I would sometimes be thinking of things in my head, you know, visualizing things and setting goals and focusing on them and so on. And what I wanted would not come from the area where I was doing the acting. It would come somewhere else. I was going out, like as a real estate, I was going out knocking on doors or something to try to get real estate listings. And I was getting lots of listings, but not from the knocking on doors. So I stopped knocking on doors and stopped thinking about it, and I stopped getting listings from other places. And so I also realized that it may not happen in the way you think it will happen, and to be open to it happening in whatever way it happened. So
that was one of the big learning experiences for me, is to be open to be surprised. For the longest time, because initially when I was working back in Houston and I had a job and so forth, I would expect the extra income I wanted to come because somebody was going to give me overtime. And I had to learn to let go of my expectations, because that was coming from my ego. My ego knew what my past was. It knew what my perceived capabilities were. It knew what the avenues of income based on the past were supposed to be. And I had to let go of my ego and allow the universe, which, of course, has the global perspective, to say, you know what, we can surprise you and bring money to you in any number of ways that you've never even imagined before. You just have to let go of being concerned about it. And that was a tough one, because I had to trust, which is another big issue for most people. It's like the step five in the attractor factor is about trusting. It's about letting go. It's about going with this whole process. And what I have found is that at this stage of my life, I am amazed at where the money comes from, how much comes in, and the level of wealth that is there. There does not seem to be a sky is the limit type of thing, because even the sky is the limit. We seem to be able to go far beyond it, and I have no idea what the limits are. As long as we take the limits off of our own brain, our own belief system, it could come to us in any number of ways that we've never imagined before. Certainly could come from the old routes that they came into our lives before, but as long as we're open, it could come in surprising ways. And that was one that I had to wrestle with. And then the other part that you had mentioned a little bit earlier was about when you stopped, that a lot of this stopped. And I have found that, yes, when I stopped focusing on what I wanted and stopped declaring goals and stopped spending time visualizing or nebulizing or feeling what it would like to have the things I wanted, it seemed to slow down to a kind of an automatic pilot level. So in other words, if I've already raised my prosperity IQ, if you will, then I will continue to bring in that amount of money for that level. But if I wanted to raise the level, then I had to consciously do something. That's where I wrote out a vision, or I had to write my goal, or I had to do some of the things you were talking about. So I found that I have to keep doing it. And it's not a have to in a negative way. It's a have to in a fun way. It's almost like writing out a Christmas list, you know, saying, wow, universe, I'd really like to have this and this and this. And I'd really like to experience this and this and this. And it'd be really cool if you can bring it by this and this and this. Then it's just fun. It's placing my order with the universe, kind of depositing it in through the mental bank, so to speak, and then acting on my hunches and paying attention to the opportunities and acting on them when they show up and being dazzled and surprised as it all unfolds. It's a wonderful process.
You know, and I want to insert something here that we sort of talked about right at the very beginning, and I find that this is, it at least appears to be ironic. I don't think it really is ironic, but it appears to be ironic, especially to someone who isn't really creating much success in their life. And that is that the more successful you get, the more you're able to manifest whatever you want, the more money you can make and all that sort of a thing, the more you realize that it doesn't matter whether you have money or whether you have things or whether you have stuff. And it kind of becomes, it's sort of a game, and it's fun to play the game of let's manifest some stuff.
Yeah.
But the more that I have, the less I realize, or the less I need it. The more I realize that my happiness and my inner peace and my fulfillment in life is not tied to this stuff. A lot of people that don't have this stuff, they really think that if only I had this stuff, then I would, you know, if only I could pay my bills, if only I had a partner, if only something. It's great to have all those things. You know, it's the old, I've been rich, I've been poor, and I like rich better.
Right.
You know, that, a lot of people have said that. But it really, once you almost have to get a lot of stuff before you realize that getting a lot of stuff does not make you happy. It's almost a cliche that people that have a lot of stuff, some of them are miserable still.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought it up. It kind of brings us full circle in a lot of ways. And I guess I would like to leave you with a thought here, leave everybody listening with a thought. One of the things I heard decades ago that I did not grasp right away, and it really jammed my brain when I first heard it, and I had to wrestle with it before I began to understand it. And it was this one line that said, you can have whatever you want in life as long as you don't want it. And I wrestled with that for the longest time. It's like, how can I want it and not want it? How can I want money or want a car and not want it? I changed the wording a little bit because I'm a word guy, so it made a little bit more sense to me, but the concept's still strong. And that is, you can have whatever you want in life as long as you don't need it.
Well, it's kind of the difference between preferring an outcome and being attached to an outcome.
That's exactly it. It's exactly it. Because when you're attached, when you're dependent, when you're desperate, that's the energy that you send out that ends up attracting more desperation, more neediness. You don't get the thing you want. You end up getting this feeling of desperation, which you think is driving you. It's the whole attractor factor in a nutshell, really. But it's really a thought. I guess there's so many things we've covered on this amazing call. I'm just blown away by this. I'm going to have to listen to it myself to just grasp everything we've touched on. But this idea that you can have whatever you want as long as you don't need it, meaning that you can have it as long as you're not attached to it. You can have it as long as you're not going to live or die if you don't get it. You can have it as long as you're not desperate for it, you know, needing it, addicted to it. You can have whatever you want as long as you don't want it.
Yeah, and I think part of what I was saying was that the more you realize how easy it actually is to manifest whatever you want, the more secure you feel that mm-hmm. that can't be taken away from you, and therefore this clinging and grasping for things kind of goes away, and that's when it becomes really easy. You know, Napoleon Hill was very wealthy in 1929, and he lost everything in the stock market crash. And he has a book that he wrote when he was in his 80s called Grow Rich with Peace of Mind. It's really different than his other books. It's a much more thoughtful book in a way because he was very old and he knew he wasn't going to live that much longer. And he, in that book, he says that when that happened, he spent a few minutes being kind of miserable. And then he realized that though he had lost all this riches, the real riches he had were inside his head and all the principles he knew about how to create things in the world, and of course some other principles too, spiritual principles, and that no one could take that away from him. And after that, he made way more money than he had made before, except this time he didn't spend it on having 6 Rolls Royces and a lot of other stuff that he had spent it on the first time that he realized was, you know, he was just kind of doing for his ego at the time. So there's a couple of other things I jotted down where we were talking that I'd like to get your thoughts on before we wrap this up. One of them is I'd love to ask you a question that I'm asked a lot. In fact, I wish I could find an email here, but I'd have to scramble around while we're talking because someone asked me this very recently in one of my online courses. I'm telling people to do the things we've been talking about on this call, and some people say, well, you know, I start focusing on what I want, and then I actually feel really good. And then I come back to reality and I realize that I'm poor and I don't have this, and you know, they go back into the what they consider to be their grim reality, and then they say, you know, I just, this whole idea of doing this just seems phony to me. I just can't fake it. The reality is that I'm poor and miserable, and I'm uneducated and I don't know what to do, and so I know how I answer that question, but how do you answer it?
Well, in the attractor factor, I say there's a missing step. And there's step 3. I call it the missing secret. And that's the idea of getting clear. Getting clear means that you want to get clear of all the negative beliefs within you, the programming and so forth, that are in the way of you achieving whatever it is you happen to be. When somebody says that they can't do it because they feel like a phony, that's a belief. They are giving it power when they keep repeating it. I feel like a phony. I can't do this. I feel like a phony. I can't do this. Well, repeat it enough. It's your reality. It goes back to some of the things we talked about earlier. And then there's this whole perception thing that we talked about earlier, too, that they may feel poor. And I don't know where they're living, but I imagine if they're in a one-room efficiency and they got a refrigerator and maybe not even a TV, they're living better than people in true poor countries and third-world countries, or living better than people that were in castles in the 1500s. They are in the highest level of riches in comparison to somebody else. So when they say that I'm really poor and whatever, they've made a judgment about themselves. They want to get clear of that. So for me, it's all going back to getting clear. They're accepting their illusion as their reality, and they're not taking any steps to change it.
Here, I found one email that's kind of like this. It's very short. I'll just read it. It says, I've spent the last several days trying to notice any negative feelings, what I don't want, and immediately refocus on what I want. However, in most cases, I find that after a few seconds, I'm back focusing on what I don't want. This is very frustrating as I keep noticing what I don't want and then fear that I'm going to create it. It feels like a never-ending process. I don't see how I can keep this up indefinitely. Any suggestions that would make this process easier would be appreciated. And, you know, it is a tedious process at first to keep pulling your mind back to what you want. And I think that I've uncovered really what's behind all of this. Why there is this pull to focus on what you do not want, even though it's very unresourceful to do so. And that is that when people are growing up, if they are traumatized in some way, they reach a certain conclusion about the world and life, which is that the world is a dangerous place, or it's a potentially dangerous place. And in order to avoid that danger, I've got to watch out for it. Well, to avoid danger, you've got to focus on it. And then your brain says, oh, he's focusing on danger. He must want, whatever the danger is. The danger could be being poor. It could be being alone. It could be being abandoned. It could be, whatever.
Yeah.
But so ultimately, what you can exercise willpower to keep your mind focused on what you want, despite the fact that the negative emotional charge from past traumatic events is pulling you toward that. But eventually, you've got to get clear, as you say. You've got to heal the root cause of that trauma in some way. And the two tools that I use are Holosync, which is very powerful in doing that. And then in my online courses, we do a lot of timeline therapy, which takes people back to the root cause event. And it's a very elegant way of people eliminating the emotional charge on it so that it feels totally flat emotionally, totally emotionally neutral, and it no longer pulls their attention.
Let me offer a third idea here that has worked for me, and I alluded to it when I talked about going into the Mental Toughness Institute for weight control. That's the idea of being in a supportive group. And, of course, Napoleon Hill called it a mastermind, and I have been I'm currently in two different masterminds, and I have found being in a supportive group to be an incredibly powerful way to elevate me from what I used to be tugged back into. Now, whether that meant the old lifestyle of wanting to go back into a habit of overeating, well, if you've been doing it for 50-some years, there's a very strong tug to go back to the habit. And making up your mind to change that is part of it, and making that perfect decision and being diligent about watching it is part of it. But I have found that if you have support from other people, either going through the same thing or they've already been through it, who are rooting you on, who are available for a weekly call or a meeting or an email, that is incredibly powerful in keeping you above what has pulled you down before. So I would offer that as a third tool, not a replacement for anything, but saying that the whole idea of a mastermind or a support group has been, in my experience anyway, phenomenal in transforming the old into where I want it to be, into this new.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And this is part of the reason why we offer support coaches in our Holosync Solution program. And in case somebody is listening to this and they're saying, well, I don't know anybody I could do that with. All the people I know are all losers and idiots, and they wouldn't be supportive of me. In case anybody is saying something like that, this is a time to ask that magic question. How can I find a group of like-minded people that will help support me? And if you really ask that question and really get curious about it and keep asking it and keep pondering it, you will magically somehow find a way to create that group of people. That's,
we live in the age of the Internet. The groups are all over the place online.
Yeah,
and if you can't find an existing one, you can probably create one either online, virtually, or in your own neighborhood. But my whole point is, yes, I love what you just said. Direct your brain to find the answer for you, but don't be afraid to ask for help. That's one of the success parts of the AA program is, get support. So this does work, all of these things.
Well, Joe, we did not really talk about what we were going to talk about before we did this, and I had a few ideas about that but 90% of what I brought up I thought of off the top of my head, and sometimes that's the best way. I really want to thank you for sharing your brilliant knowledge and wisdom with everyone, and it's always a lot of fun to talk to you and to share ideas with you. So thanks so much again. Joe gave two websites that you might go to again if you want to find out more about Joe and what he does. And I would endorse Joe very highly, and what he does is going to be very useful to you, I'm sure. And that would be MrFire, MrFire.com, and then I want to make sure I get the one about the car right.
Attract a new car.
Attractanewcar.com.
Yeah.
Is that linked to from MrFire.com somewhere?
I don't believe it is, but it's brand new, so it's not linked just yet.
Okay. So that's a somewhat secret site that...
Yeah, we just made public right now.
Okay, great.
Oh, this has been exhilarating, Bill. Thank you. We've worked together to bring up some wonderful stuff. I feel stimulated and enlightened, and I've learned just as well as I hope I've taught. So this has been fantastic. Thank you.
Well, it was a pleasure for me, too. So thanks a lot, Joe. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening to this conversation with another of the Masters of the Secret. I know this information will help you master the secret yourself. The fact that what you focus on is created in reality. To thank you for listening, I have a very special free gift for you. As I've worked to master the secret and implement it in my own life, one of the most powerful tools I've used is Holosync audio technology, which, when listened to using stereo headphones, places the listener in deep states of meditation, literally at the touch of a button. In addition to many mental, emotional, and spiritual benefits, Holosync creates an ability to focus your mind so powerfully that manifesting what you want becomes easy. I'd like to send you a free Holosync CD so you can try it yourself, along with a free special report explaining how it works and all the amazing benefits it's created for nearly 300,000 people who've used it in 173 countries. To get your free Holosync CD, just go to themastersofthesecret.com/free CD. Remember to put the in front of Masters of the Secret. themastersofthesecret.com/free CD. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to being with you again next time.